Tonight we are beginning the new Sefer of new Chumash Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra starts the Shabbos, and then if you have your stone Chumash, it's on page 544. And Vayikra begins with the words Vayikra. Appropriately enough, Vayikra el Moshe, and he called to Moshe. Vayedaber Hashem elav me'ol noed le'mor. And Hashem spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying. So, immediately at this pasuk, if we look carefully at it, we find something puzzling about the grammar. The pasuk starts, Vayikra el Moshe. He called to Moshe. Who's he? Pasuk uses the pronoun or whatever. There's no proper noun saying who it is that called to Moshe. He called to Moshe. Presumably, the one who called to Moshe is the one who is Vayedaber Hashem Elav. That Hashem spoke to him. So Hashem was the one who called to Moshe also. If that's the case, so then why doesn't the pasuk identify the caller and say, Vayikra Hashem el Moshe, Vayidaber elav? One would think that the first time we mention someone doing an action, here we have Hashem doing two things in this pasuk, calling Moshe and speaking to Moshe. So why isn't he identified with the calling? He's only identified with the speaking. Would seem to be more clear if it would have said Vayikra Hashem el Moshe Vayidaber elav. Hashem called Moshe and spoke to him. That's question number one, which the commentaries ask. And see with you, I saw the Or Chaim, was one of the major commentaries, asked this question, and he says a number of answers. I'll share with you one line that he says, which itself requires more explanation, but I'll tell you what he says. He says, the reason why I wrote it this way, he says, it's derech kavod. It's a way of showing honor to Hashem. By writing it this way, probably he means, he doesn't really explain it that much, but I didn't really understand his explanation. He's very concise about it. He just says, a Yikra Moshe written this way without identifying Hashem until afterwards is more of a respectful way of expressing what happened here. And I think that requires an explanation. Why is it more respectful to say he called Moshe and Hashem spoke? Why is that more respectful than saying Hashem called Moshe and he spoke? That's all the first question. Question number two. Okay, first we have Rashi. So Rashi says here that what is this idea of calling altogether? What's Vayikra Moshe? He called Moshe. Says Rashi l'chol dibros l'chol amiros l'chol tivuyim kodma kriya. That every time Hashem spoke to Moshe, whether the word used in the Torah is dibor, like it says here, or whether it's amira, which is another word for seeing or saying, vayomer, or it's called tzivuyim, or sometimes it says a word by itself that Hashem commanded, whatever the terminology is used, kadma kriya, there is always a calling first. And what's the idea of the calling? Lashon chiba. It is an expression of chiba, of love. Lashon shamalachay asoreis nishtamshim bo. It's a terminology that's found in the context of the malachay asoreis, of the ministering angels. Shenemar, as it is written, V'kara ze el ze v'amar kadosh. Quote in the pasuk in Yeshayahu that we say always in Kedusha, V'kara ze el ze, and they call to each other, kadosh. So that's the word kara. The kara is a word, says Rashi, that has a connotation of love, and that is somehow connected with the fact that the ministering angels use it. Well, that needs, that also requires explanation. What is the love that's inherent in this term calling, or the concept of calling, and where do we see that in the pasuk by the ministering angels? That's the second question. Another question I want to ask over here is that in the next Rashi, there's rather lengthy Rashis over here, but the next Rashi, Rashi makes a point, and he says, in this pasuk it says, Vayikra, and he called, and it also says, Vayidavra, and he spoke. It says Rashi, and even though we say that every time Hashem spoke to Moshe, he called, he says, but one might have thought that Hashem called Moshe more times than just when it says Vayidaber, because we find even in this section, for example, in the Sefer Torah, we have Hashem spoke to Moshe, and we know we have these spaces, like these paragraphs, kind of in the Torah where there's a space between different sections, and sometimes you have a space and it doesn't say afterwards again that Hashem spoke. So, for example, if you have the Chumash, just turn to the next page, 546, towards the bottom of the page, Pasuk Yod, there's a space there, there's a new paragraph, starting from Pasuk Yod, but it doesn't say Vayedaber. It just continues. So that's a space. So one would have thought, says Rashi, that every time we have a space like that, Hashem also called Moshe. Says Rashi, no, it's only Vayikra, Vayedaber, like we find in this passage. The calling is only when where it says Vayedaber that he spoke. But if it was just an interruption without a new Vayedaber, there was no calling. And that says Rashi, so what's the point of these interruptions? The point of interruptions is to give Moshe time to think between each section. He needed a break between each section to digest what he just learned, to think it over. And that's the point of the interruptions, but there was no new calling. So there also we have to understand what's the significance of this. What's the difference? There wasn't a new calling. I would have thought that there was, but there really wasn't. Why is that important? What's the message that we're supposed to be getting from that, that back and forth regarding the calling with the interruptions? So, I think those are enough just for the questions for now. So, just to repeat that briefly, the first question is why doesn't it identify Hashem as the one doing the calling, but only identifies him as the one doing the speaking afterwards? That's question number one. We said the Or Chaim says that has something to do with giving proper respect to Hashem, but we don't understand exactly what that means. So that's question number one. The second question is, what is this idea of calling as a terminology of love? And it has to do with the Malachi Hashore saying, the Karazel Zeh Kadosh. What is that? What does that mean exactly? And thirdly, all these questions are in the very first words here. Thirdly, what is this idea that we may have thought that there was a calling every time there was an interruption in Hashem speaking to Moshe? And we say, no, in the interruptions, there was no calling. It was only when there was a new Dibur, when Hashem started again. What's the significance of that? What are the questions for that? So, I want to begin with something, a concept that I've spoken about past. I'm going to try to elaborate on it tonight a little bit more. This is an idea that I saw in the Sefer. It's a Chaim that I quote very much from my Rebbe Reb Chaim Mintz. He has a beautiful thought on the idea of Vayikra, of the calling, and the calling of the Malachim. And he says the following thing. He says, he bases it on the fact that it's interesting that when we say in the davening, in Uvo L'Tzion, that we say in the morning, at the end of Shachar, so we also say that on Shabbos, at Mincha, we say the same thing also, Matzah Shabbos, We say the Chazal Zavi Amakados, and then we also say Kitaibu. We say the Aramaic translation. The Aramaic translation of this word, these words, the Korah Zal Zavi Amar, which normally we would translate when they call to each other. The Aramaic translation is very interesting. The Aramaic translation is Mekablen Dain and Dain. Mekablen means, and they receive from each other. The Korah is he translates, I guess it's an interpretive translation. He interprets the Karaza as what are the Malachim doing, the angels, when they're calling to each other before they say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. What are they doing exactly? The Karah, they're calling each other. What's the meaning of that calling? Says the Targum and the Kabbalah, they're receiving something. So he explains, I think one of the commentaries did the Malbim, explains that the idea is that the Malachim, the angels, when they're calling each other, they're actually acknowledging that they need to be receiving something from each other. And the idea is that not all angels were created equal, or maybe they are equal in some sense, but they're not identical. Every Malach, every angel has his own level, his own way of, if you can say, his own perspective, if you will. I don't know what a Malach's perspective is exactly, but it's not exactly the same. And what Malach A understands about the glory and about the holiness of Hashem is not the same, not exactly the same as what Malach B understands about the glory of Hashem. So when they are calling each other, they're about to say, it's their time, they're supposed to be saying Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. But before they say Kadosh, 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 they call to each other. What are they doing when they call to each other? They're acknowledging that they need each other's understanding to help them with their recital of the Kedusha. They can't do it. Each one is saying, I can't do this on my own. I need your understanding of the Kedush Baruch Hu to enlighten and to enhance my understanding of the Kedush Baruch Hu. That's what it means, the receiving from each other, and that's the Korah. So the idea of calling in this sense is when you call somebody, most of the time, you're calling them because you want something from them. There's something that they can do for you. You're calling them, that's probably the most common reason why you'll call someone. You call someone because you want them, even if you just want them to give you their attention. That's also you want something. But you have something that you want from them, and that's why you're calling them. That's the idea of calling. So that's why the Malachim are calling each other, because they have something that they want from the other Malachim. So Rabbi Minson, a Sefer, he says, and this requires a lot more, he explains it more at length, and more, but explain it also maybe a little bit differently than what he does. He says that this is the idea of the love that Hashem called Moshe. Hashem called Moshe because Hashem, so to speak, wanted something from Moshe. He, in a sense, and we'll soon see that it's a very important word in a sense, but in a sense, as it were, Hashem wanted to receive something from Moshe. But when he was, even though he was teaching Moshe, he was giving something to Moshe, but there was some kind of in some sense, there was a reciprocal thing. Hashem was teaching Moshe, but Hashem wanted Moshe to learn. And so Moshe was fulfilling the will of Hashem by doing that. And in that sense, Hashem was receiving something. You know, how can you give something to someone who has everything? We'll talk about that soon. But in some sense, there's this idea that Hashem was calling Moshe because he wanted something from him. And that is the greatest Lashon Chiba, that Moshe is showing his love to Moshe, that I have this relationship with you, that I'm not just giving everything to you, but I'm actually want something from you, and I'm receiving something from you, and that completes the close bond of love that there is between Hashem and Moshe. And that's the idea of Lashon Chiba, and that's the idea of the of the of the of the Russia of the Malachian Shores. That's the idea of what the angels are doing. That's the idea. I think we mentioned this in some in the past year. And that's what I saw in the session from Rabbi Mitzvah. I want to try to explain this a little bit more, and particularly in the context of Karbonos, which is the theme of this week's parasha. So, but first I want to share with you, just to get a better understanding of how this all works, I want to share with you something from the Rambam. And this is a very fundamental idea, and we're probably all familiar with this idea in a general sense, but it's such an important concept. It's such a fundamental concept in Judaism, Yiddishkeit, in the Torah ideology. It bears repeating and trying to get it more clear. So the Rambam, in the very first chapter of his codes of the Aruch HaZakeh, which he calls, the first section is called Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. It's the laws of the foundations of the Torah. And in chapter one of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, the Rambam devotes the chapter talking about God, about Hashem, and what we know about Hashem. And one of the things that the Rambam talks about here, quite at length, is that Hashem is not a physical being. And he says he's not a physical being, and therefore he doesn't have any of the attributes that are associated with the physical. Then he says, well, that's true if Hashem is not physical, so what does it mean when the Torah talks about the hand of Hashem, and the eyes of Hashem, and the ears of Hashem, and the feet of Hashem? What's the Torah mean? He says, those are all, he says, the reason why the Torah writes it that way, he says, because it's the Torah is talking to human beings, the audience, the reader of the Torah is a human being, and a human being doesn't understand something that's totally above Hashem, who's totally above the physical. All we understand are physical things. That's all we see. That's all we have experience with. So therefore, the Torah talks our language, but really, it's not meant to be taken literally. Excuse me. It's more. I mean, call it a metaphor or something like that. It's something that's, we talk about the eyes of Hashem. Yeah, Hashem doesn't have eyes. But just that we're supposed to be understanding Hashem in terms as if he had eyes, because we know a human being has eyes that can see, and seeing is an awareness of what's going on, and we all know that Hashem is aware of what's going on, so we say Hashem's eyes, but not that he really has physical eyes, and so on and so forth. And the Rambam goes, talks about a length about this. And he goes, the Rambam continues along the same lines, and he says something else, which I think is more, which is particularly appropriate to the point that I want to try to make tonight to understand some of these things we're learning. The Rambam continues, and he says, because we know that Hashem doesn't have a body, doesn't have a guf, he says, we also know that nothing happens to Hashem that happens to bodies. In other words, physical things, certain things, there are subject to certain kinds of happenings, and those kind of happenings that happen to physical things don't happen to Hashem. And first he says that Hashem is not bound by space, he's not bound by measure, he can't go up, he can't go down, he can't go to his right, there's no right of Hashem or left of Hashem, there's no front, there's no back, there's no sitting, there's no standing. He's not contained by time. He doesn't age. And then he says he doesn't change. He doesn't die. He's not alive in the same sense, because in physical things can live and die. Hashem is just exists. He can't sleep. He can't be awake. Then finally, after saying all of this, the Rambam says the following. He says, the low caste, Hashem cannot be angry. Listen carefully, because this is the crux of what I wanted to talk about today. For lo kas, Hashem cannot be angry. For lo schok, Hashem cannot laugh. For lo simcha, he can't be happy. For lo atzus, he's not sad. Okay? He doesn't get angry. He doesn't get happy. He doesn't get sad. So then he continues, that's what I'm just reading the Rambam. Then he says, and then the Rambam says, one second, but if that's the case, what do we do with the psukim in the Torah and the Navi that seem to contradict this? They say, Yosher b'shamayim yischak, Hashem sits in heaven and he laughs. Ki asuni b'havleim, they have made me angry with their vanities. Kasher sos Hashem, like Hashem is happy. He says, what are all these things? So he says the same thing. Dibra Torah Shaloshin b'nei Adam. Hashem said, Hashem is all just in order that we should be able to understand. But not that Hashem is really angry or really happy or really sad, because that would reduce him to something material, something physical, something bound by the kinds of limitations that we're familiar with in our world. And Hashem is totally beyond all of that. And therefore, these things are all to be taken metaphorically or something like that, not to be taken literally. That's what the Rambam writes. So, I want to go ahead. We have limited time here, so I want to go immediately ahead, which I just noticed tonight. I didn't even realize this. That this is what the Rambam writes on this page. The next, very next page of the Rambam, the second parak in Hilchos Yisrael Torah, the Rambam writes something which seems to be going in a completely different direction. Because so far, the Rambam has been telling us that if we think we know anything, we can really understand Hashem, we can't. Hashem is beyond anything we can understand, and Hashem is beyond the emotions that we have any we can relate to, right? But then the Rambam says in the second part, and I'm not saying that this is a contradiction, but I want to point out that the paradox of it. The Rambam says, I'll read you the next line of the Rambam. Hakel hanichbad v'anayra hazeh. Now that I explained in the first chapter about Hashem, and Hashem the nichbad, the honored, and the noira hanoira, and the awesome, this awesome and honored God, mitzvah, there's a mitzvah, le'ahavoy, it's a mitzvah to love him, u'liyiroi, so and to fear him. So, I once said, maybe I shared this with you, one of the most tragic things, one of the tragic things that I have come across when hearing about people's in their relationship to the Torah is when occasionally I hear about someone who feels absolutely no emotional connection to Judaism or to Hashem, and that I think is a terrible tragedy. And I once even heard somebody, I didn't hear this straight from this person, but I heard somebody else from this person that claimed that he can't feel any emotion when he dies or anything because he knows that Hashem is beyond any emotions and beyond any understanding and beyond any, he's not relatable, and therefore he can't have any relationship with him because Hashem is not relatable. And that obviously is very, very far from what the Torah is given to us for. And the Rambam himself already points out this paradox is actually the crux of what it means to be a Torah Jew. It would be an overstatement to say that. The Rambam writes this in the first two chapters of his Yisodei Torah, his Foundations of the Torah. The first thing is to know that there's a creator of this world, and the creator of this world is totally above and beyond anything we can imagine. That's A. And Hashem is so far removed from everything. And then immediately the next thing we have to know is that Hashem needs to be our very, very closest, best friend, if you will, or something like that. We need to have the deepest emotional attachment to Hashem, deeper than anything else. Now, how do we do that? How can we have it would seem that this fellow who said that he had no attachment, you know, he has a point. So the answer is, and it's easy to say, but this is really the life work. Well, the answer is that Hashem has given us it's really the Rambam words, Dibutar Kolosim and Adam, meaning that Hashem has communicated to us how we are to understand him on an emotional level, how we're supposed to relate to him, how to look at him and relate to him. And the way we do that is by reading these words in the Torah, and now that it's specifically talk about the emotional aspect. We read in the Torah that when we do certain things, Hashem is happy with us. When we do other things, Hashem is angry with us. Now the Rambam says, oh, is Hashem really happy the way human beings are happy? No, of course not. Hashem is far beyond human beings. Hashem is really angry the way human beings are angry? No, of course he's not. But does that mean that we should not feel that Hashem is happy with us, or Hashem is angry with us? Of course we have to feel that way. And does that mean that we're feeling something wrong? I once put it this way. I don't remember if I shared this with you. I think I put it this way when I spoke about that person. I said, you should tell that. The guy told me that somebody he knows, he can't relate to Hashem because Hashem is not really good. Hashem is not really happy. He's not really sad. He's not really angry. He's not really. I said to him, listen, you're right on a philosophical level that Hashem is not happy or angry or whatever it is, the way human beings are. That's true. But if you think that Hashem is not happy or angry, and that's the world you've made in your mind, so you're much, 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 much more wrong than the person who thinks that Hashem is actually happy and angry. You can have two people. One person thinks that Hashem doesn't realize, he's not so sophisticated, and he thinks Hashem is really happy, and Hashem is really angry, and he never learned that section of the Rambam. And then we have another person who learned that section of the Rambam, but he didn't go any further, and he didn't develop any kind of understanding on an emotional level that Hashem really is happy with him, and Hashem really is angry with him. That second person is missing the boat of Yiddishkeit much more than the first one, because we're at the end of the day, Hashem created us as human beings. And Lashon ben Adam, the Torah talks to us as human beings. And as human beings, when we're told if we do this, Hashem's going to be angry at us, we have to really feel when a person did something wrong, they have to feel Hashem's angry at me. Now, if you'll ask them philosophically, is Hashem angry the way human beings are angry? No, Hashem is far beyond that. But still, Hashem told me that he's angry at me. Why is he telling me that? He's telling me that because there's something there. There's a reality. There's a reality to that Hashem is angry at me. It's not the reality that we can understand. It's not the human reality. But there's some kind of reality that's being expressed to us that we need to live in that world and relate to reality. And that's how we have to live our lives. We have to live our lives that when we do certain things, we make Hashem happy. We do other things, we make Hashem angry. We do other things, sometimes Hashem is sad. When a person like Chazal say, when a person is in pain, Hashem is in pain. The Rabbi would say, Hashem is in pain. He can't be in pain. He doesn't experience pain like a human being experiences pain. Of course not. Hashem is far beyond the pain that human beings can express, could feel, but at the same time, if Chazal tells Hashem is in pain, yes, Hashem is in pain. We don't know what that means. We don't understand it. We have to realize Hashem is far beyond anything we can understand. But at the same time, those expressions, those metaphors, those analogies that the Torah is speaking to us are given to us because we're supposed to incorporate that understanding in our minds in a way that it affects us on an emotional level. And that's the way we need to live our lives. This is what the Rambam is. I believe this is what the Rambam is telling us. Yes, Hashem is beyond, totally beyond. But at the same time, we have to relate to Hashem on a level that He's the closest of the close, and we have to create the strongest of possible emotional bonds to Hashem. With the only kind of bonds that we could, which are human bonds. because we're human. So we have to use our humanity to connect to Hashem the way it's being expressed to us in the Torah. That's how we have to connect. That is one of the most fundamental principles of the Torah that the Rambam explains to us at the beginning of this sefer. Now let's try to understand that a little bit more specifically. So what is it exactly? Hashem tells us that we do certain things that will make him happy, something like that. What does that mean, and how do we understand that? So I actually think that in the section of Kabbalah, we find this expressed more explicitly in the Torah than anywhere else, but in most other places. In the context of the Kabbalah here on page 546, if we want to next page, after the first section dealing with the Karban Olah, he uses these words which we find several times, at least four times in this week's Pasha. It says, Reach Nichalach Lashem, at the end of Pasuk. The end of Pasuk Kes, all the way at the end of that paragraph. Reach Nichalach Hashem, which they translate a satisfying aroma to Hashem. What is this satisfying aroma? Hashem smells something. He certainly doesn't smell the way human smell. He certainly doesn't enjoy a good smell the way a human being enjoys a good smell. So what is this Reach Nichalach Hashem? There's Rashi, based on it, it's also Gemara. It says, Nachas Ruach Lefonai, Nachas Ruach. It's pleasing to me, or something like that. Nachas Ruach, Nachas. We all familiar with the word Nachas. Someone has, you have Nachas. We all want to have Nachas from our children. So this is really where the word comes from Nichoach, Nachas Ruach. Nachas Ruach Lefonai, Hashem has Nachas from us. When a person brings a carbon, Hashem has nachas ruach, Hashem has satisfaction, is pleased, because, why? He says, Rashi says, Shamati, because I said, v'nasu v'tzayni, and my will was done. So, what is it that there are certain things, like a carbon, that gives Hashem nachas. It makes Hashem happy with us, something like that. It makes Hashem pleased with us. When Hashem told us to do something and we did it, Hashem is pleased. He has nachas. Now, because we go back to what we were saying before, we can say, we can give Hashem something. Hashem created a system by which we live, at least in the reality that Hashem wants us to relate to Him. We relate to Him that we're giving Him something. But, and what are we giving Him? If you bring you burn a carbon on the Mizbech, Hashem is not eating it. Hashem is now, what does He have? We're giving Him something? So even on the level of how we relate to Him, like, it's hard to understand what we're giving to Him. So Hashem says, this is what I want you to understand. What you're giving me is, you're giving me nachas. That's the beginning and the end of it. There's a sefer, which I think I mentioned here maybe once or twice in the past, called Yisod Yisrael Shavoda. The sefer Yisod Yisrael Shavoda is a very high level, it's a sefer that discusses very, very high levels of service in Hashem. So it did very difficult sefer to access something practical from it. But it was written a few hundred years ago by the Rebbe of the Rebbe of the Chofetz Chaim. And with Alexander Ziskind of Rudna. And this sefer is all about service of Hashem. It's called Yisod B'Sher Shavodah, the foundation and the root of the service of Hashem. The very beginning of the sefer, again, where he talks about what is service of Hashem all about. So he says that the human being, Hashem created the human being, and Hashem, that we serve Him. And what is that? He says, what does Hashem get from us serving Him? We can't give Hashem anything. Hashem doesn't need anything. Hashem doesn't need anything from us. What are we doing? What are we doing with serving Hashem? That's the Yisod Yisrael Shavoda, giving Him nachas, nachas ruach. This idea that we find, he quotes the pasuk in this week's parasha by Kabbalah, and he says, this is not just an idea by Kabbalah. This is the entire life of Torah and mitzvahs, of serving Hashem, could be boiled down to one thing. We're here in this world where Hashem is giving us an opportunity to give Him nachas. That's the whole thing. And, I mean, of course, there's a lot more to it than that, but he said you could understand the whole thing in that framework. And that's the, of course, Hashem doesn't need our nachas either. We have to put it still, even the Rambam would say that Hashem doesn't have nachas in the way human beings have nachas either. That's true. You have to understand that as well. Even nachas, Hashem is completely above. However, the pasuk in the Torah is telling us, it's talking, like the Rambam says, B'lashem b'nei Adam. Hashem is talking to human beings in a way that we can understand, with concepts that we can relate to, and we have to take those concepts, internalize them, and relate to Hashem that way. So the concept is that Hashem gets nachas when we do certain things, specifically when we do mitzvahs, when we call specifically karbonis. It's the same thing as true when we daven today. Davening is takes the place of karbonis in many ways. When a person studies Torah, when a person gives a dog, when a person does any mitzvah. Any mitzvah that a person does, he's giving us a nachas. Remember years ago, I may have shared this once, but I don't think I did recently. I remember years ago when I was maybe 15 years old, I quoted earlier than my Rebbe Mintz. So one of the highlights of our year is when I was a teenager, one of the highlights of the year was Purim. As it is maybe for many. But Purim, the highlight was we used to go to Rabbi Mintz's house when he was having his Purim through that. It was a very, very uplifting experience. I can't describe the whole thing right now. But one of the things that went on every year, and I think it still goes on, we're still doing this every year. One of the things that went on every year is that he would say, make a suggestion that everybody present, because of the, it was such an uplifting time, everyone should use it as an opportunity to accept upon themselves some self-improvement to take into the year with them past Purim. And every year Rabbi Mintz would choose something which he would suggest that everybody would be the Kabbalah, something you should take upon yourself. So I believe it was when I was 15 or 16 years old, that one of the first years, if not the first year that I was there, that Rabbi Mintz made the following suggestion. I wish I could say I lived up to it, but I just want to bring out this point because it's what we're talking about tonight. He said that it would be a good idea for a person to try at least maybe once a day. I can't remember exactly how he quantified it, but let's say once a day, when a person does a mitzvah, he should think that I'm doing this mitzvah in order to give nachas ruach to Hashem. That was the Kabbalah. Once, according to the Yisrael Rebbe, that's what life was all about. Even once, if a person can have that in mind, it has an effect. It has tremendous, tremendous effect on a person because this is the kind of relationship that Hashem is teaching us in the Torah that He wants us to have, make with Him. A relationship that a child or a disciple has a beloved teacher, beloved Rebbe, I want to give them nachas. I want them to be proud of me. I want to make them proud. We want to make Hashem proud, so to speak, of us, right? Sometimes people talk to the little kids that way. Hashem is so proud of you. That's great. It's a great way to talk to your kids. But we need to talk to ourselves that way. We need to think that when we do a mitzvah, that's what we're doing. We're giving Hashem nachas. And that's all part of the Vayikra. Let's go back to where we started over here. Vayikra, Moshe, this sefer is called Vayikra. Hashem is calling. Hashem is calling us. Hashem is calling Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem is calling all of us. What does it mean he's calling us? It means Hashem is saying, "There's something I want from you. I expect something from you, and I want something. And I'm gonna be happy. I'm gonna have nachas if you do that for me. If you do that for me, so to speak, I'm gonna have nachas. That's Vayikra. Now the pasuk says that we said, Rashi said, that I don't think that there was, one may have thought that there was calling for the interruption. So I thought, it's a very nice interpretation for Rabbi Moshe Feinstein on the Sefer about this. He says that interruptions, excuse me, are necessary. It's not, you can't go, so a person can't study Torah straight, or let's say we can talk about it in general. Person can't always be davening, can't always be doing specific mitzvahs. Person can't always be studying. That person has to take a breather sometimes. They're necessary. Even Moshe Rabbeinu needs to take a breather to think about what he to digest what he just learned. But we shouldn't make a mistake and think that those breathers, although they're necessary, they're on the same level. Hashem has the same love for those breathers as he has for the mitzvahs themselves. We have to understand there's a hierarchy here, that there's something. And this is an important thing, because we can make a mistake. We can sometimes make a mistake and think, which is true, that if we're doing things that are necessary, Hashem is happy that we're doing those things. That's true. But we have to understand that there are certain specific activities that give Hashem nachas on a whole different level. And those are the activities Hashem revealed to us that are the mitzvahs of the Torah, whether it's the davening, whether it's the learning, whether it's the mitzvah of tzedakah or of chesed. When we're doing things that are specifically mitzvahs, those are the things that Hashem, that give Hashem the most nachas. And that's where the Vayikra was, before Hashem spoke to Moshe, where Moshe was learning Torah from Hashem directly, that's where Hashem called to him. Well, no, there was an interruption, even though the interruptions were necessary and they were right, and Hashem was happy that those interruptions were happening because they were needed, but there wasn't a calling, because the calling is emphasizing that there are certain places, certain contexts, certain mitzvahs, certain activities, that's where it's really at. That's where the real nachas ruach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes. And then I think it's part of some of the lessons that we learn here from this week's parsha. And it's something to think about. Man, it's coming Pesach and Mitzvah Shem. And this is some of the things we can have in mind. We can think about during the Seder. We have lots and lots of mitzvahs to do. And this is part of the message of Pesach. And we don't have time to talk about it at length right now. But if we think about it, we realize this is why Hashem is taking us out of Mitzrayim, because he wants something from us and he wants us to give, he's giving us the opportunity to be his nation and to be the Machas. And now those are some of the things we can maybe bring on to the Seder as well.